Okay, while they're moving, I'm going to introduce myself. I'm Maria Elena Campestegui. I'm going to be the moderator, and welcome. So our session this morning comes to you from APHA's new Center for School, Health, and Education. And our discussion is going to focus on a major priority of the center, which is the creation of school-based healthcare, of a school-based healthcare movement beyond the clinic walls. Because of the unique relationship that the centers have with kids and families, we believe that school-based health centers are a proven strategy for eliminating or reducing barriers to graduation and to prevent school dropout. They have the capacity to impact the obstacles that derail students from educational success through programs, policies that benefit every student in this school. So today, we're going to talk about the fact that we believe that school dropout is a national public health priority, and that school-based health centers should be key partners in addressing the obstacles to learning that impede improved health outcomes and graduation. I'm going to start by introducing our panelists. They're going to help us explore the topic from a variety of viewpoints. Each of them is going to have 10 minutes to share their thoughts. And I'm a really nice person, but when it comes to keeping time and moderating, I'm really tough. So I'm going to apologize to all of the panelists ahead of time if I have to cut you off. I have a timer. And I'm going to apologize to the audience, too, because I'm going to kind of keep things moving along, and we want to have time for really good discussion. So our first panelist, I'm just going to introduce them all to you. I'm going to tell you what they're going to talk about, and then I'm going to have them go one by one. So our first panelist is Dr. Janita Richardson. Wait, hi. Janita is Associate Professor in the Department of Public Health Sciences at the University of Virginia School of Medicine. She also has her own consulting firm. Her work is dedicated to addressing the links between health and learning readiness, particularly for disenfranchised children and youth. She's presented at lots of different conferences, has published lots. I'm not going to list any of that, but she's going to talk about the holistic framework for the relationship between health, education, and school-based health centers. And then we move to Dr. Serena Clayton over here. So Serena has been the executive director of the California School Health Centers Association for 8 years. And she's watched the number of centers in her state grow from 122 to 183. She has a PhD in public health from UCLA. She's going to be talking about how school-based health centers have a unique opportunity to expand on the clinical health, clinical medical care to play a public health role in the school community. And then we move to Carl Logan. Okay, Carl hails from Portland. He's going to talk about the challenges that students are faced with when they go beyond the classroom and the essential role that school-based health centers play in light of a heightened academic expectations and social pressures. Carl is a regional administrator for Portland Public Schools in Portland, Oregon. And in this role, he supervises and supports 14 K-8 schools, and he supports all new building administrators. He is a former high school administrator and also principal. And in those roles, he oversaw school-based health centers in those schools. And then we have Bertrand Perdomo Ucles. And Bertrand is currently a student at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles. He is a former youth board member from the California School Health Centers Association. So he started in high school and kept it up when he went on to college. And in that role, he provided technical assistance to health educators and young people in terms of how to engage the youth voice in school-based health. He advocated before California legislators for over 4 years on the importance of centers, and he helped to secure funds for state health programs. So if you have ever doubted the power of the youth voice, I hope that you will not have a doubt when you walk out the door after you meet Bertrand. So we're very proud of him. He's going to be sharing his perspective on being engaged in policy advocacy and the impact that it's had on him personally, and also the impact that it's had on school-based health. And finally, we've got Terry Rice. Say hello, Terry. Terry is the director of the newly established Center for School Health and Education at the American Public Health Association. She provides leadership to the strategic development of school-based health programming and policy to avert school dropout. So she is the former program director at the Kellogg Foundation that led the school-based healthcare policy program for the foundation. And Terry's going to talk about the expanded role and opportunity for school-based health centers to systematically integrate public health into their work. And also talk about how the center is going to support that moving forward. So without further ado, I'm going to have Janita move right on.
Thank you and good morning. I have no relationships to disclose. Why is Jason in the hospital? Well, because he has a bad infection in his leg. Well, why does he have that infection? Well, because he was playing in a junkyard next to his apartment building and there was some jagged steel that he fell on, and then the cut became infected. But why was he playing in a junkyard? Because his neighborhood is kind of run down and a lot of kids have to play there. There's nowhere else to play. But why does he live in that neighborhood? Well, because his parents can't afford a nicer place to live. Why is that? Why can't they afford a nicer place to live? Well, because his father is unemployed and his mother's not well. But why is his father unemployed? Well, because he doesn't have much education, and as hard as he's tried, he can't find a job. Why? This gradual upstream questioning highlights the complex web that health and education weave around economically disenfranchised youth and their families. Jason's environment, his individual health, his relationships, his community resources, and yes, even his housing, all exact a high price on his well-being. The relationship between socioeconomic status and health is one of the most robust and well-documented relationships founded in social science research. A massive synthesis of this research tells us that good health in childhood both reflects and predicts full social and economic participation. We don't need to write another article, conduct another study, to know what Jason's problem is. Despite all of the medical, educational, and public health gains of the last decades, the benefits have eluded some of our most vulnerable citizens, particularly children and youth. Jason needs a safety net constructed to proactively and reactively create partnerships that protect and nurture his innate educational and health potential. And he needs that safety net now. Please forgive the busyness of the slide, but the purpose is just to show some of the relationships between low income and status to health and education. As we consider them, it becomes clear that as in the story of Jason, many of the symptoms of poverty are really mine canaries, indicating the degree of control and power that people have over their life circumstances, which in turn fuels their range of choices and their discretion to act. One poignant example when we think about young people at this nexus of economic disenfranchisement is the issue of dropouts. Every 26 seconds, a young person is dropping out of school. There are in excess of 1 million young people dropping out every year. Now for a moment, let's think about how all of us would gain if Jason's intellectual potential was optimized at least enough for him to finish high school. If 1,000 dropouts in each state and the District of Columbia graduated from high school, it is estimated that in 2010, they would have added to the GDP an additional $50 million annually to state coffers, as opposed to being a drain on those same resources. I propose that we shift our attention to the disruptive ecologies where children reside and where they are educated. The National Research Council panel on high-risk youth say that too much emphasis has been placed on high-risk youth and their families, and not enough on the high-risk settings in which they live and work and go to school. When we consider, as an example, the concentration of African American, Hispanic and Latino, American Indian and Alaskan Native students in high poverty schools, we see the tentacles of not only family income, but concentrated community poverty and institutionalized disparities. But all of the news is not bad. There are models of partnerships between health and educational communities that weave a protective web for children like Jason. School-based health centers are one of those models, and we'll hear more about that from Serena. But I'd like for us to think for a moment about the ecological frame that we often use in public health, which has its roots in the work of Uri Bronfenbrenner and his Ecology of Human Development. We most often see these concentric spheres as individual, relationships, community, and society. The theory posits that lives are simultaneously influenced by multiple levels of interactions. Young people present themselves in schools and do not leave their relationships, the influence of their communities, and what society values and does not value with them at the door of the school. They bring all of that with them. Disruptive ecologies create childhood and youth dis-ease with their environments. This terminology posits then that children are responding to the deficits in their communities and their environment, as opposed to inherently possessing and being attracted to risk. If we focus on high school dropouts, the figure categorizes some of the documented disruptive ecologies that are linked to early separation from school. We know, for example, that for high school students, test scores are a high predictor of whether or not young people drop out of school. That depression is another issue that is predictive of dropping out. That low-income students are 6 times more likely to drop out of school than their middle and upper-income counterparts. That peer pressure and safety in school has an impact on whether or not children stay in school, how attentive they are in school. And I just want to diverge for a moment to give a little personal story, so I don't have to look far for examples of this. I have a nephew who attends a high school in Maryland at an undisclosed high school. We pray daily that he can get to and from school safely. He has been jumped, and I wonder how this young man focuses on an education when around every corner in his school, he's wondering if he's safe. The literature on precursors to dropping out is replete with examples of social determinants of health. Housing patterns relegate the poor to racially and socioeconomically segregated neighborhoods, and these neighborhoods and their attendant poverty are associated with high crime rates, decreases in safety, diminished social networks, food insecurity, all of which have been linked to dropping out of school. One of the first rungs in deconstructing this negative cycle is earning a high school diploma. So many challenges that young people face are outside of the realm of our control. But with school-based health centers partnering with schools, we can become the protective factors that help mitigate against risk. When I talk about resilience, I am talking about an ecological phenomenon that cannot be developed by the sheer willpower of an individual student. Rather, it is developed through interactions with their environments, families, schools, neighborhoods, and larger communities. Considering the last slides, we can see how school-based healthcare centers, and we'll hear more about their contributions, can serve as protective factors for young people who will populate communities of need. Interventions with the dual benefits of improving health while reducing dropouts distribute benefits to all sectors. And these are some of the ways in which school-based healthcare centers specifically can contribute to dropout prevention and in some cases reacclimating young people to school after they've made an initial decision to drop out. Disruptive ecologies fueled by economic disadvantage are complex and messy to deconstruct. Yet that does not relieve us of our responsibilities to act on behalf of children and youth who are in need of supports that help optimize their chances to emerge from early disadvantage to productivity and good health. We may not be able to resolve all the antecedents to dropping out, but if we in the public health community partner with schools, there can be happier endings. How did Jason manage to graduate from high school? He was one of the lucky ones. His school had an SBHC that helped provide him with skills, a supportive environment, engaging adults, early detection and treatment of health challenges. He didn't end up in the hospital again with a cut and an infection. He was treated in school, and he never missed a day. Thank you.